434-1790, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
How are you? Yes, I'm good. And yourself?
I'm well.
Good.
Sometimes you have some people that seem to be experts, like Wesley.
But you sound like Arthur, though. That just freaked me out.
A man, no.
Your boy ever tell you so? Do you sound like Arthur?
No, somebody called me Martin. Maybe sound like somebody else.
You sound like Arthur. I was like, wait. I thought that Arthur would come back for me now.
Well, I gotta change my voice then.
Yeah. No, I gotta change. Yeah, Arthur's a good fellow, man. I miss him. I miss his calls. I really do.
There's a gentleman called Wesley that seemed to be an expert.
Mm-hmm.
But the definition for expert is a man who knows more and more about less and less. Yeah. You know, I find that if Sandy Lane decide that they're going to give you some money, and it is their money, and they give it to who they want to give it to, who is Leslie or Mary or Jane or John to tell Sandy Lane who to give their money to and how it should be dispensed when they give it to you? Mm. But that's the thing that one has got to come to grips with.
That's one side. The other side, which I think is more interesting, is this whole question of whether there's a better way of doing it.
That's all I agree
with. Right, so he has to wrap his mind around that thing and the better way. Because if you can say to me, is the wrong way, fine. Well then, but just tell me what's the better way.
What's the better way?
If you tell me that you're going to give it out based on political support, you know, you got to give Natalie some money too.
I agree with you.
Natalie beat candidates. Natalie getting more votes than some candidates.
I say the same thing. Every time he calls, he always has some kind of thing. Well, what one has to recognize is that with COVID-19, that the government has a plan to introduce certain things as they go on. Various phases of introduction. And when he comes out talking about the food carts, which I believe all the food carts should have a license number on, a number that you can refer to. If I go to a food cart here, and if I'm sick, I got because of their food I ate, and they get some kind of diarrhea or something like that. There should be a number on all those cards. All of them should be numbered like the coronavirus as well. There should be some kind of contact number that you should be able to determine that, yes, I bet from number 40.
And they give you number, and they met you number 2.
That's right. Yeah. I think that those are things that you need to pay more attention to, especially when you talk about this COVID thing. You could get things like eating and drinking and sneezing or whatever it is. But you need to pay, the Ministry of Health need to pay some more attention to those kinds of things. It's hard to say you have a certificate for the polytechnic.
Polyclinic.
And you could show it. But therefore, there should be some kind of identification number on that to make sure that you could refer to if something happens.
I think though in Barbados, because of the size of the country and the fact that you usually will buy food from somebody that you know about. So if the person give you the belly, you ain't going back there again. So if a fella accustomed going at the yellow van that's parked outside, you know, Cave Shepherd, and you know, you were get around at the yellow van giving people the belly, then he will go to business or she very quickly.
Yeah, last night I spoke to Dennis, and we were talking
But I just realized who it is I'm talking to. So were you not having anything to say about this current crisis with the NUPW?
You don't realize who's talking to?
No, I tell a lies. I shouldn't say I don't realize. Somebody don't tell me who it is. Somebody WhatsApp me and ask me if it isn't you, and say that I should ask you about this current issue with the bonds for money for savings of public servants. So what is your view, sir?
I don't like to get involved too much
But why not? You're retired. You're retired.
Make it is that when one recognizes the whole question of the challenges that is faced in Barbados, are going to face Barbados, you have to look for new things to do to make sure that we don't really go under. And therefore, if there's no money to pay public servants, people took haircuts already, and it might be possible that a lot of people might have to take haircuts. No, you just see it promoted the government minister decided to get 12% cut. So these are things that one would have to look at in order to really save Barbados and even save your own job.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I don't think that nobody really wants to lay off workers again. I can remember in 1991, 1992, we had the 8% cut. We had several whammies, the 8% cut.
Stab tax and
cuts all over the place. Whammies left, right, and center. And some people like me get San Juan and never get pension yet, says I get San Juan. But
will you get Lego to it, really, sir? I thought they used to protect the union bosses.
I mean, that word Lego. At a certain age, you say something, you try to get back. Yeah. Everybody gets a job easy, but it's very difficult when you get over the age of 40 or something like that to determine that you can get back another job. And you'll be out there in the wilderness for many a year.
So I get Lego myself too, you know, so no problem. I know the feeling.
the feeling is crucial.
Yeah, actually, it happened to me three times.
Really consider the proposal when they get it, because I think what's happened on the other worlds, but they will have to look at a proposal and determine with their membership and their council how they go forward from there to see how they can put the country first in terms of putting themselves first. I mean, I understand that. But cuts are not, people don't like cuts because they bleed a lot.
Yeah, but painful.
But, right. But you have to look at it very seriously and determine how we can meet, how the miners can meet and how best they can discuss and come up with a solution to determine that we will still keep Barbados afloat.
Yeah. All right. Point taken. And I do feel that, as you said, it is a peculiar time where we need to really look at the details and say, how can we help to pull this country out?
That's right.
Of this mess.
Before I go, I spoke to Dennis last week, and I was asking what the Barbadian population like in terms of the blacks and the other ethnicities. But it's like 94% black and 4% white and 1% Asian. And that, and those 94 point something and 4 point something and 1% Asians. And I wanted to find out, every time people open their mouths, they talk about the poor black Barbadian. What percentage of the population is the poor black Barbadian?
That part I don't know. I don't really know. I feel like that's something that really needs to be reevaluated to understand this concept of social class. I feel that the black population in Barbados is considerably wealthier than people will give them credit for.
I believe so too.
This idea of the poor black man, to me, is a phrase that has been overutilized, and it forgets that there's some pretty wealthy black people knocking around. There's one in the studio with me.
94.2 or 3%, I think it's on 94.5, are said to be the black people in Barbados. And I was going to get for Dennis tomorrow, but I know he hears what's going on right now.
Yeah.
That I was thinking that, you know, that there need to be something, somebody should come out and say that these are the, I know your Corey, he deals with the
poverty
the
thing. But, I mean, I deal with numbers, and my thing is that if someone were to say, because when we do the census, we would be in a position to assess income levels. In Barbados. And you could say, well, the top tier of the income is, you know, whatever. And I guess you could cross-tabulate it with race. My challenge is that what exactly is a black person? That's the difficult thing I have, where you classify a race. It's hard to know who is who.
I agree with that too.
So someone like Mark Maloney, what, is he black or is he white?
Well, that's debatable.
But there you go. And that to me is the crucible of the argument, because we often assume that when a person is light skinned and has a lot of money, they're white.
Yes.
When in truth and in fact, that's not a particularly good way of looking at it. We should say, assess the amount of money, assess the color, and let's categorically say if the person is black or white, and then how much money they have. But we have a concept of beige and white in Barbados. It's very liberal, a very liberal interpretation, which once the person steps off of our shores and they get to the United States or the UK, they automatically become black.
But my research told me that it's about 4% that we call white, and that we call white, that the people that is called white in Barbados.
And how many of them are wealthy? You may have a larger percentage of them are wealthy, but
right.
I also think that you have to ask yourself whether the comparison in terms of the ones that are black that are wealthy may very well put you in a different comparative position.
That's right. I agree with that.
So, but I don't know. I guess for me, sir, race, I have never been as excited by race as a basis of comparison and analysis as many other analysts, because there are a lot of people who focus a lot on race issues in terms of understanding economics and stuff like that. I believe that historically it was a factor. But my challenge now is that I do feel that when it comes down to it, a white boy my age that has a similar background faces some of the same challenges that I face. Because when I go to a bank to borrow money, I don't see anybody white, you know.
Not these days.
Precisely. Indeed, when I go to a bank, period, I don't see anybody white in there working. All the managers and everything in the branches are and indeed, in the case of several of the banks, the directorships of the banks regionally is a predominant amount of black people.
Tremendously over the years.
It's an interesting discussion, and I will listen for you and Dennis tomorrow on it.
That we get all the time. Yeah. All,
the blessed one, man. All right, sir. Good to hear you. Apparently, the Allen School is in St. Andrew. Sorry, I was speculating just now, and I was tentative, sorry, in my statement, but it has just been confirmed that the Allen School is in St. Andrew. So that would be the St. Andrew Secondary School, yes. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Wicker.
Yeah, hey, Mr. Straker's Tenantry. How are you, sir?
As a matter of fact, it is Belle Plaine, St. Andrew.
It's Belle Plaine, St. Andrew. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. My apologies. You went to school there?
No, I did not.
Okay. Where you went to school?
I went to St. Leonard's and the Barbados Technical Institute.
It was the Polytechnic at the time, or it was called the Technical Institute?
It was the Barbados Technical Institute.
At that time?
And it subsequently became Dennis Sammy Jack Professor of Polytechnic.
Okay.
And I started at St. Stephen's Infants and St. Stephen's Junior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started my 11 plus at St. Leonard's, so it always has a special place in my heart. Mm-hmm. 1979. You were at school then?
I was out by then, Mr.
You were out by then, okay. I just wondered in terms of the age, whether one of the older boys that I displaced when I went to take my 11 plus.
No, Mr. Beckham, I ain't fighting for it, you know. I can face it. I went in 64 and come out in 68.
Okay.
Went to Polytechnic in 68 and come out in 73.
Well, you came out of the school when I was being born.
You see, that's what he tried to tell you. That I was wrong a long time.
Mm. See, no, I've seen you, and I know that you're not two mornings. So
I
spring chicken.
But I happen to do a little stint at the Allen School. That's why I can tell you.
Right.
So we can leave that there.
So you travel from Bayou, and can you live closer to town all the way to Allen School?
We can leave that there, Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah. I travel all the way to Foundation, so I understand.
I want to see a look at salary cut there with you.
Okay, so we're going back to 94. 91, sorry?
Well, I don't think we need to go back.
Stop tax and all?
I don't want me to go back. I want me to stay in the present right now. And remember that before the last election, the unions was marching for 23% increase.
Right.
And the union leader, one of the leaders, had said they can afford it, and he knew where the money was. Do you remember all of that? The money everything was there. Well, right, it was there.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, as soon as the election was finished,
it wasn't there anymore.
One union accepted the 4.5, which got increased to 5, and the next one said there was always amendable to it. You remember that?
Yeah.
But if it was amendable to it, why they was fighting for 23?
Because the assumption is that it was based on the projections that were being made by the finance minister. If you have a finance minister that is saying that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and you have a prime minister that is saying that it is Easter and that Good Friday has passed and it is Easter and it's time to reap the rewards, then you reap the rewards. So the union at that time fell into line and said, if there are rewards to be reaped, we shall help to reap them.
Well, you know.
So the conversation changed because after the election, the prime minister made it clear that there were no rewards to be reaped. That the days for reaping had passed and there was no time to sow. So with the imposition of the International Monetary Fund, it was fairly clear that this idea that Barbados had money to share with was not the case. And as a result, the public servants accepted the conservative offer of 5%. Agreed?
Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
The question still stands.
Mm-hmm.
If there was always amendable to 4.5 or 5%, why were they sticking up for 23? You know, that's
because they thought that government had money. Could government tell them they had money? Because at Easter time, you harvest.
Mr. Wickham.
That's all it was. So if I know that you tell me things good, money sharing way, I'm going to tell you I want some. But if you tell me that things hard, I can be glad to get anything at all. But so it's really about you, it's not about me.
Mr. Beckham, they accepted the 5%, then all of it was taken away. And apart from the 5% being taken away, they also put on some shaves, haircuts, and decapitation. So that right now, there's nothing else to shave off, you know. Everything.
The chicken, the chicken pluck bear.
It's down to bare bone now.
The chicken pluck bear,
so
bear.
Now to come talking about more cats, Mr. Wickham, you know, it can't even come on the table. There's no cats to come on the table. Only one cat can come on the table now, and that would be cabinet. Not another fella can talk about no cat. So therefore, this thing about cutting, remember they went and they legislate that you cannot cut the public service salary no more. So that off the table. And to come now to talk about a rose by another name,
still smell that
sweet. Come off the table too. And you see the private sector now wants a piggyback on it too, you know, after all the streets. You know, and all the VAT that was written off and all these things, now this one coming on piggyback panic now too, that they ain't even negotiating it. They gain your directive, take this or go, take this, because remember, that was the precedent that was set. Take this or wait 15 years, take this and die before you get it and all sorts of things. I don't see how nobody could come to talk about salary cuts, Mr. Wickham, not after all the hardships that we went through.
Well, this is my perspective. I don't know if you want me to say what I think. You need to look at it in the context of the scenario at that point in time. So there was a time when we were told that there was money aplenty and the unions adjusted their demands accordingly. There was a time when we were then told that there was little money and the unions adjusted their demands accordingly. I'm agreeing with you that I think that the chicken has been plucked fairly bare. And right now, there's not a lot more that people can give. The challenge that I have, sir, is that we are currently in a new kind of environment in which the capacity of government to satisfy all expectations have changed. And I think that when we have a conversation about whether I should drive a Mini Moke or whether I should drive a BMW, we are now at the stage of the conversation where I have to say, maybe I need to put down the Mini Moke and ride a bicycle. And that is the conversation that we are having now. So I think that in that context, if you look at it in terms of our capacity as a nation to pay public servants, that's the kind of conversation that we need to have, because I cannot see realistically losing the 40% of revenue that government claims they have lost. Losing the benefit of a winter, summer tourist season. Losing the benefit of a winter tourist season potentially. And not even being sure that you will have a tourist season in 2021. I don't see realistically how a government can say, well, I expect that my revenue will continue to be able to satisfy the expectations at that level. Now, I know how you feel about the cabinet, right? And I understand. But if the cabinet were cut in half, the government would still have the same problem. Because realistically, without tourism, a tourism sector to tax, without tourists coming in, and without people working in hotels and bars and whatnot, without that kind of commercial activity, we run into a problem. So my thing is, if you're going to say to me then that the chicken pluck bear and I can't give up my car payment, I can't give up my house payment, I need to start asking for a different conversation. So then, what am I supposed to do in terms of not having the money to actually pay you the salary that you're supposed to pay, and I just don't have it? Are you making sense?
Yes, you're making sense.
Oh, thank you. I feel honored.
All I want you to do is advise them to lead by example. And the only place that got fat is up in the breast. You know, the breast is always be the meaty part. It's up in the breast. So start from there. That's all I'm saying, you know, Mr. Wickham. I'm saying start from there.
Barbados is a leg and thigh community. I'm told that the we prefer the neater parts of the chicken. So we ain't about the breast. We're about the leg and the thigh.
The breast is always available. and the breast is always available. So breast is readily available. Mm-hmm. Trim the breast, Mr. Wickham. That's all I'm saying. Start by example and decide that 12 is the magic number. You know, mm-hmm. before the mantra was 12. Let me start with 12 cabinet members.
Which one you would send home?
Which one? I wouldn't.
First.
You could start from there.
Okay, which one you wouldn't send home?
I already said the one that I was saying home already, and when they didn't agree with that.
Who is that?
I would say that if there's no tourism, then send home the Minister of Tourism.
But then you need somebody to guide the tourism recovery.
Well, you can get that idea from somebody that's down the line. If a factory ain't got no work, they send home the workers. So don't ask me to pick out
you on. I don't see that happening. I really don't see it happening for reasons which are I would think are obvious. My other question is, what other realistic options do you have to pursue? Because sending home a couple of ministers is not going to make a difference to the overall position.
But I don't want a couple.
You just want one.
12 from 26 is 14. 14 can't be in a couple. Wow. I keep in 12 and sending home 14.
That's a lot of ministers.
Well, yeah. I didn't pick the 12, you know. 12 is the magic number. Yeah. So let me stick to the magic number.
All right, sir. Fair enough. I can let you get that one, and that would be your home run, or that would be your four, your six. One can argue today. And I can. That's a political thing. My issue is really getting out of this current mess and the challenges that are being created by this new set of circumstances.
Well,
40% of revenue is a lot. You know,
we can't get out the mess by picking at the bones anymore. So right. Therefore, leave the workers alone and cut
the breast.
The breast, which is up in the top. Mm. So between the ministers and the consultants and them, show me that they're really willing to do something and start with them.
Right. Fair enough.
And tell the private sector to stop picking at the workers, because when they get the disgruntled, it's going to be a different story. Mm-hmm. Any salary cuts will have to be voluntary and then even negotiated. So don't think that they can just come and tell sign this and sign that and sign that and sign the next. It can't do so, Mr. Wickham.
All right, fair enough.
You have a nice day.
All right, good to hear you, Mr. Stryker Senator. You do have a good weekend, and hopefully next week, Tuesday, we'll speak to you again. Down to brass tacks. Come on, Peter, don't be ridiculous. Really? Salary increases? Okay. Peter, how come you don't recognize a black person, yet you don't see white people working in banks? Is it that you can only recognize white people but not blacks? Not really sure. And a lot of these other ones I can't really read. All right, let me stop there, go back to the calls. 434-1790, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir, how are you?
I'm trying to stay as focused as the good Lord would allow me.
Oh, this is my friend Brains?
Man, I tell you that name is for my...
Friends.
Our family in Deacon Road. Right.
It's good to hear you again, because I've noticed you've been very silent as far as this program is concerned of late.
Yeah, because, like, my friend... The man that says greetings and salutations, I heard him once said there are two kinds of people that call the calling program. A person that have something to say and a person that want to say something. And I want the people that have, when I call it, I call because they have something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And now I want to say something. If you understand that kind of
very nice
language.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I want to ask you this thing. Don't you think it would be prudent? And I'm using this word prudent in a very strong way. Where the Caribbean leaders should be able to synchronize what they're doing, and so that all the Caribbean leaders can be reading from one page. They could be reading from one page before they decide to open back up the LEA or all the other airlines in the Caribbean that fly within the Caribbean region, because they got some people that seem, you know, they just seem not to care about the other regions, but they care about their own country, which is fine. But we got to get the islands of the Caribbean reading from the same page before they open up the airlines. I was hearing this morning from the news that the people in Guyana are very concerned about the COVID in Guyana. Because I suspect, and I don't want to seem like an alarmist, but I suspect that the second time around, it's going to be much worse than now. So to prepare for that eventuality, I would like to think that it would be prudent of the leaders of the Caribbean to start thinking and doing things, reading from the same page and communicating more with each other and get things in order and properly so before they open back the areas. That's one thing, and I want to make another point. But I want to hear what
I don't disagree that I would like if we could reopen on the same page. The problem is that we are not on the same page already, because St. Vincent and Barbados have never closed. Several of the others have closed. And Liat is only not operating because Liat is saying that unless all of the islands are open, or some of the islands are open, it's not practical for them to operate. Because you can't run an airline flying between St. Vincent and Barbados, which are the only two that are open.
Correct.
But I agree with you that I would love us to be on the same page. I would have loved if we had all closed together, or we had all gone through the shutdown together, and we would have coordinated our reopening together. But there were differences of opinion across the region regarding how we should do it.
And Liat should never be able to fly again until such time as all the leaders of the Caribbean get it correct.
Well, I suspect that it won't fly again until most of them reopen to start with. So
Right.
But what's the other point, though? Yeah.
The other point is this. COVID, and I like to call it corona. This coronavirus seems to have changed a lot of the way we speak as well.
Mm-hmm.
And let me give you an example. When people talk about masks, right? The mask you put over your face. They talk about masks and then got the at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that mask is spelled M-A-S-T. Mask, and that mask can have a lot of different meanings, including it could also mean a part of a ship. And Dennis said that he's a yachtsman, so yachts has got a lot of mass,
mm-hmm.
right? I want to know how to get from mask, M-A-S-K, which is the correct pronunciation for the mask that we put over your nose, and get to M-A-S-T. And then at the end of it, they're saying mass. I don't understand that, Peter. You used to lecture at university. You only went to Richmond. I wonder if you can help me.
You went to Richmond and not St. Leonard's. You went to Richmond when it was Richmond.
Yeah, I went to Richmond.
I don't lose too much. That's for Sandy. That's for my friend Sandy to focus on the pronunciation of mass and mass. I know that in Barbados, a platform would always be a platform for some people. And, you know, people will continue to talk about reversing black and plugging out things. I mean, there's a lot that we say and do in the context of our cultural use of the English language that may be inappropriate. So I don't lose any sleep over them things.
Once I can
understand when you're talking about a mass, what you're talking about, and a sandwich, all them things, once I know what you're talking about, I'm good. Right? But the Sandys of this world, you have to satisfy them at a higher standard. But for me, it's just old talk. You know?
One last thing. I was listening to a certain businessman on the calling program with Mr. Ellis. And he was suggesting that workers in this country, the salaries should be cut by 50%. And apparently, some of his colleagues has taken heed and have started to cut people's salaries. I don't know by how much. But I want to ask that certain gentleman, if he's going to cut people's salaries by 50%, what is he going to reduce the cost of his goods by? So to accommodate people who has had a salary cut.
Right, you understand what you're saying, Peter? Yeah. All right, sir. I want to thank you for your contribution. It's good to hear your voice back on the air. I was one of the people who called for you to come back, so it's good to hear you again. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm fine.
I got to speak to my two DLP, favorite DLP callers in close succession.
Okay.
So,
now, Mr. Wickham.
So you called to finish off what Straker's Tenantry didn't.
Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
I am still on vacation.
Okay.
From talk shows. But I heard you earlier. And something I heard this morning, I had to take a couple of minutes out of my vacation.
And do a cameo.
And call you.
But were you on holiday, though? What happened? Admiral's treatment of you has forced you to take a holiday?
I said this is the second time I have waited my vacation.
Okay.
To call. It was one, and now you is two.
I would treat you so, though. You know that.
I hope you behave yourself.
No, I would be. I always respect the elders in my society. So I wouldn't.
That you would end up like him. Okay.
How be like him?
Behave yourself. That you would end up like him. No, like Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
This morning, as usual, I listen to all the stations that you get news from, international and local. And there's a little station that is bring over things that. I find no other way to station about this to me like to bring over. I won't call the station number unless you want me to say.
No, you don't have to.
Okay. And this morning, I heard someone representing the teachers explain to me, because they look like the only one who hears is me. That's why I'm calling the station to find out if it was dreaming when it was being broadcast. And the person speaking on behalf of the teachers' union say that they know nothing about the schools opening on the 15th and the 11th class on the 14th. And they went on to say that it was a proposal. Do you know anything about it?
I don't know. I don't know. You just tell me this story, though.
No, listen. Do you?
Well, I don't know anything about it.
Did you hear news then?
Mm-hmm.
Because CBC and Brainsover, VOB and Brainsover. But I heard it on a small station this morning, and I hear the union voice, not a message read by no one saying that the union leader said it. I heard a union voice. And that person said what was said to us on Saturday by the Minister of Education is not true. That it was a proposal that the principals and everybody's to meet on the 18th. Which is the 18th? The 18th was yesterday?
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
I want to find out from how come that a person like Peter Wickham, that is so close to this government in all ways, ain't know about that. How come you know?
Because maybe Peter Wickham is not as close to government
especially
as you might think.
Especially Mr. Wickham, especially a person who's anti-11 plus. You know that no agreement has been made yet of schools opening the 15th and 11th class on the 14th. You don't know nothing about it?
I haven't been paying attention. I heard the part of the press conference regarding the 11th class and the date that it was scheduled, and I believe that part of that conversation was also an indication when the students will go back out of school. But
you
frankly,
heard it on Saturday.
I don't recall when the day was I heard it. It's
okay,
probably Saturday.
So you hear this union leader who said that was only a proposal. Well, let me tell you, that is what I heard. So you could check and see if this is true or not. That's one. Second, Mr. Wickham, you ever yet was a member of a constituency close enough to be preparing hampers and
looking after,
let me finish, Mr. Wickham. Don't jump.
But you ask a question, I answer.
But I have finished the question. Or a person who helped financing persons in need and in a constituency?
No.
You ever
no.
in that position?
No.
Well, I have for years. Fortunate or unfortunate, it started when I was 12 years because of my stepfather with a gentleman called Captain Ferguson. And I can tell you this.
Hello.
The Democrats do not help their supporters like the Barbados Labour Party. And for all the years, I'm taking no hamper when I'm at the house. When you and Mr. Clark, or I'm not saying Mr. Clark, in that honest and his branch operates different to all the other branches in Barbados. But I'm telling you, Mr. Wickham, that a party looks after their people. And my party looks after the people less than the Barbados Labour Party. And there's one organization that see after the people who work with them and who don't know it beats, it's the Barbados Labour Party. And if Sandy Lane, because I hear you very all the time, and I know you know better, if Sandy Lane could put money in a BLP hand, I would call that campaign money. Let me move on to my next point.
I disagree with the last one fundamentally, but you go on to the last point.
Now, there's a gentleman who's called, and I always represent him, called Stryker Senator. I'm not here representing him now, because I stand with that. Because to me, he like bad treatment. I would like you to help the listeners by telling us, when did Mr. Flinders Thorpe or Chris Sinclair give Barbadians the impression the Treasury is good, they could get what they want? When that happened?
Prime Minister spoke about Easter. You don't remember the Easter conversation?
When he said Easter, what he meant? He meant that people goes to, for instance, he didn't start with Easter, he started with Good Friday.
Right, he said Good Friday has passed and Easter is here.
Let me, you like to turn, because I hear you earlier say that you read WhatsApp. You know what we're using, I'm using your terms, but you know, don't try to put things the way. What Mr. Stewart was saying is...
Put the things the way how... Put things the way they are?
Good Friday was a day of suffering.
That's right, and he said Good Friday has passed and it is now Easter. Easter is upon us. He said it at the to the party faithful, and I assure you was in there at the Democrat Labour Party headquarters. He said Easter is upon us. Easter is here. It is time for people who have worked long and hard in the vineyard and sacrificed to reap the bounty of what the nation has to offer. I remember that conversation.
Okay, but I didn't see you.
So you can't tell people so one day and then tell the next day that you ain't got the money. That's why they ask for 23.5%.
This is strict.
Because in Easter, at Easter, you don't ask for no little foolish 5%. You all ask for 23.5%.
Mr. Wickham, this is strict. What I'm saying to you is, Stryker's tenantry was talking at that time about 18% and 23% increase, respectively, that the union was asking for. What Stryker's tenantry was trying to tell you, and we're not finishing, at that time when they were asking for 18% and 23%, you and all the people in Barbados who know economic backwards, like Dr. Clay Masco, and that nice lady from Trinidad was telling the whole of Barbados that we were borrowing money to keep the economy running.
But they were borrowing money to pay salaries, was that untrue?
Listen, y'all call it printing money.
Right.
So how you could get there with him to give people the impression that Mr. Flinders Thorpe, because he's here Friday and it's Christmas, and based that the wage increases, how you arrive at the two of them? How you put them together?
I just find the article here in Barbados Today. It is entitled, "Barbados Has Risen," declares Stewart. "Good Friday is over and Easter has dawned for Barbados," declared Prime Minister Flinders Thorpe yesterday as he touted the island has risen from its financial challenges.
Well, I can ask you a question.
That sounds like a 23.5% speech. That sounds like a 23.5% speech.
I can ask you a question.
And you compare that now with a speech that you heard from Prime Minister where she said the situation is critical, mission critical. We have to go to the International Monetary Fund. We cannot continue to borrow money to pay salaries. And that's the reason why we get from 23.5% to 5%. It's the tone, it's the pitch.
Mr. Wickham?
Yes, sir.
No, I ain't come to go down all this political world you call
it. You can be help yourself but be political.
You know that I don't operate like Circus Entry. I call you number one because he's my number one caller on the radio.
And I thought that I was your number one moderator.
Let me explain this to you. You're saying to me,
yes,
that the present Prime Minister had to do this. Our present Prime Minister, you give me the impression that they only had to give a little 5% because they don't have no money. And you give two people $54 million. Listen to this. You write off all the debts between 68 and 2000. You write off the VAT between 97 and 2000. that stores in town that I would not call, that I got the figures because of Franklin. The man that a lot of people love and a few like you don't like.
I like, oh, me, I like Franklin. So you going to say that next to you? No, no. When the man see me in the supermarket, he going to cast me.
The direct figure that a particular that makes millions get $25 million.
I like Franklin. I like you and I like Stryker. But all the problem that all of you guys have is that sometimes you're misguided. But I don't blame you for that because all have sinned and fallen short of the glory. All of you.
Okay, but Mr.
And I think that today you're falling way short.
Okay, but let me, before you finish up. Right?
Yes, sir. You finish up with me.
I predict, and I just bounce off the air, because I predict the last buddy I told it to is a young man called Corey World. And the virus wasn't here yet. Okay? Now I'm hearing everybody talking about the, even the business people that get white off, all types of things to get in 2 years. Not even 2 years yet. I think it's 23 months and an X amount of days. They have got back so much money. But in 6 weeks of a crisis of 6 weeks, they're telling us how much they can cap your money with. Because let me tell you, I hear a particular businessman on brass tacks about 5 weeks ago already let us know workers got to this 50% and 35% and everything. I'm not saying people ain't gonna get deductions. I want to know when the business people, that two leading union leaders that was up front. I had, as a friend of mine tell me, he passed Colonel Road after the Labor Day speech, May 8th, 2018, and saw water coming on Frank Walker eyes. He said he'd drive up Clone Road after the meeting and he saw liquid coming down from the former union leader eyes. A lady
that what, there's the statue?
The statue, whatever was coming on the eyes, the statue.
There's like the one at the Virgin Mary. Is it Mary?
Okay.
I think that's Craig Watts here.
We had two union leaders. The NUPW president.
You can talk all of that. Look,
where the total going?
All right, let me wrap up and just say this. I know I normally give you the last word, but let me just say this, right? If I'm running a hotel, and I know that I can employ my staff and pay them at a certain level based on the fact that I have forward bookings for the rest of the year, and I have a pretty good winter tourist season. I believe we were supposed to have cricket in January. All of that would have been factored in. If I see all of that and I can say, okay, I'm going to employ people based on that, and based on the events of the last 6 weeks, I noticed that all of those bookings have been canceled, all, every last one. I have no way or no reasonable expectation of having anybody in my hotel. It's not going to take me long to conclude that I'm going to go cut salaries or lay off people because I just don't have the money. And that's the challenge I'm having whenever I have conversations with people like you, sir, that I don't think that people appreciate the fact that when you look at the books, when you look at the income, and when you know that if you have a hotel called Aqua Beach Hotel, it not only feeds you, but it feeds vendors on the beach. It feeds people who work in Quayside. It feeds all of those businesses. It feeds Chafet right around the corner. It feeds the coffee shop down the road and my friend that sells rotis. It feeds all of these people. When you do not have any bookings, you can basically tell all of these people, well, could as well pack up and go home because there ain't no money to have because the people are not coming. That is the reality that we are facing now, sir, and we cannot deal with it flippantly. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
You used you said that Prime Minister Stewart used the Easter and Good Friday analogy.
Yes, indeed.
To indicate that the last administration was awash with money, and therefore that the unions could have made a 23% increase or even greater.
Mm.
Never in your life did you ever hear during, before the election and after the election, Prime Minister Short said that the jockey was getting too big for the horse, or that the government's nipples were sore from the overfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Did the government, the last government, not run a deficit, tremendous deficit in trying to balance things and keep the social services running and civil servants being paid?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know about all these things?
I know about all of these things, sir.
So what's the point you're making then?
The point I'm making is that he said that Easter has, Barbados has risen, and that's what he's declared. Good Friday is over, Easter has dawned.
So what about the jockey?
With all of the implications, but that time the jockey had done slim back down.
No.
Because this statement was made after the jockey statement and after the nipple statement. So I am assuming that by that time the nipples were already less sore, they had regained their buoyancy, and that the jockey had slimmed down. Right?
All of you all knew up to the general election and beyond that the Jaska administration was borrowing money from the central bank, printing money.
But how could I have known that when the prime minister was saying, the minister of finance denied it, and the prime minister of Barbados said that it was Easter? And yourself, were you just saying at all at that point in time, you were quiet?
No Easter anything.
Yourself, what you were saying?
Getting too big for the horse.
You was riding a horse then?
Keep that in your mind. The donkey was getting too big for the horse. Up to now, it is still too big for the horse. That is why this government is in trouble.
Yeah. Is there trouble? What evidence of that do you have, sir? Dr. Brastocks, good afternoon. I like that caller. I like both personalities he calls with. So he's gone back to the old personality. I haven't heard the more recent one in recent times. Dr. Brastocks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Yes, sir. Well, you call in last as always. Anyhow.
Peter.
Anyhow, you carry on. We have 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had to call today because for the first call you had with Auntie America, I don't know where people get this idea that the morbidity rate is under 1% or whatever. When you look at the numbers, the morbidity rate is between 7 to 8%, 8 to 10, almost 10%. Like, I mean, and if you have to think in terms of their vote, 4,500,000 people who have been infected, and almost 300,000 plus dead. When we look at Barbados, there are 80 people infected, 7 dead. So if you extrapolate that there and say, okay, suppose 250,000 people in Barbados caught COVID, you're talking in the vicinity of 25,000 people dying. People have looked at this virus and said, oh, well, not that many people have died or whatever, and not understood the how lethal, more or less, what has happened, and the actions that the government took have been successful in arresting what could be a catastrophic situation for Barbados. Like, I mean, it is clear as that.
It's clear to me too. I listen to Auntie's position, and it's a part of the conspiracy theory that I have heard. And then I follow him online, so I've been hearing him say a lot of things on the internet that he said in these things. But I can't identify
the idea
with it.
Too, that only fit people don't have anything to worry about.
Yeah. But that was the same language that Boris Johnson used. You recall? Boris Johnson was talking about herd immunity. He said not everyone will get sick seriously and it would be like catching a cold. He said all of those things.
Wait, but the
but his views have changed radically now.
Exactly. Yeah. You have children that are dying from it. No, from Kawasaki disease or whatever, which is brought on by the COVID. Those sort of things. The trivializing of this here because we have not suffered so many deaths or whatever. I have a problem with people when they come on the radio and say things like that. Mm. And then they have a problem also when people, in terms of politicizing and just trying to say something nasty just to be political. Like the fact that Stanley and Trust gave the constituent the first job of an MP is to be your constituency representative. That is job number one. I keep on trying to hammer that into people. That is job number one.
You represent everybody.
Right. And the problem that we have, I blame you for this here as well, is that this idea that party is above all, and the parties have to be recognized as opposed to what constitutes governance, is the problem. because everybody then sees everything in terms of only from a party perspective. I find it distasteful that somebody is going to come on the radio to suggest that money given by the Stanley and Trust to the, those representatives would only go to the members of those for the, those particular party. Like, I mean, that is distasteful. Mm-hmm. No, one of the things which I want to talk about.
But we can't talk because you're hearing music.
No, but I can talk. In terms of governance, we have to separate governance from political, from party. Mm-hmm. And we have to set up government structures that allow government to work. As soon as some person gets in the government, then you can forget about political party. I hate the fact that a constituency office is... belongs to a political party.
Alright. Well, technically speaking, it doesn't. And certainly one of the things that we have to realize is that a constituency branch office is a place that you should be able to go to receive help regardless of your political persuasion. Sorry that I'm going to have to cut you, Cyprian. We're going to have to make a run because the music tells us that it's time to go. Today was a particularly delightful day. I got to speak with several of my favorite callers. I got to speak to Auntie America. I got to speak to Brains. I even got to speak to Alvin and also Straker's Tenantry, and Mr. Ecky Becky in his new incarnation called and had a brief chat with me. So this was a delightful day for someone who is a political analyst to be able to speak to all of my favorite Dems. I don't know that they got anywhere with me on these issues, but nonetheless, that's the nature of this business. So I look forward anxiously to next week, Tuesday, so we can have more interesting conversations. Special thanks to Mr. Dennis Johnson for taking us through the last 4 hours without any major ripples. You are now going to go into the next phase of today's listening, and Gentleman is here to sit with you. So until then, do take care and have a great weekend.